podcast. It's only, what, 4 days since the end of the World Series. So it's great to have your company. Thanks for joining us, as always. Just another 109 days, by the way, to the beginning of spring training, so don't be too depressed. Great pleasure to welcome to the show, as always, Eric, the producer, and Big JC. JC, of course, the man who put the it in pundit, and Eric, the producer, the man who put the balls in baseball. Welcome, boys.
I guess I'll take that as a compliment.
Producer. He put the pro in producer.
I know, but that sounded so positive and contradictory.
I know. You gotta take the piss, don't you, Goldie? You can't you can't just bear hug your friends. There's no bear hugging love.
Buddy, you're a man who gives speeches to crowds on a regular basis. You have to establish where the bar is set in that opening line. So that is exactly the purpose of the whole introduction, is to establish that I'm in charge and I don't respect either of you. That's the important bit.
Moving along.
You put the fa in alpha.
Thank you. Thank you. How are you, boys? You had a good week?
Sure. I'm back from Montreal. World Series is over. Baseball's over, but hockey's begun. So I got things to do, you know.
Well, here's a question. So you're overseeing the family in Canada. What happens in Canada with the Blue Jays not involved, knocked out of the postseason? Is there any interest?
It's hockey season.
I appreciate it's hockey season, but is there any interest?
In baseball? Yes, absolutely. I did go to a bunch of games, ice hockey games, that is, Montreal Canadiens at the Bell Center. And afterwards, and that's the great thing about the time zone. You come out of the hockey arena and it's like, oh yeah, it's 9:40. And you go to the nearest bar and it's only like the fifth inning of a baseball game. And you go, oh yeah, it's not 4 a.m.
and food being most important thing in your life, Eric, more than your kids, more than your partner. You got a lot of smoked meat, right?
I got a lot of smoked meat, which is a pastrami kind of sandwich, corned and beef kind of sandwich, but Montreal style. I did the test of many a Montreal deli in Montreal. I was there. And Snowden Deli is the winner, second to Schwartz's. In case you're taking notes of
Lester's fans.
Nah, Lester's gone down.
They're booing you.
Okay, well, anyways, in case you're taking notes of where to eat in Montreal, Snowden Deli or Schwartz's.
Or Lester's.
Right, guys, let's move this on. As always, for all our listeners, if you're watching on our YouTube channel, do press these buttons at the bottom of the screen. I'm sort of pointing in that general direction. Big up the Johnny and Josh show. All you can do to help us out on social media obviously attracts a new audience. We've got YouTube videos are back, so you can catch up on previous. I mean, you know, if you've really
what
got
I mean, a, they're back. They were never gone.
But I mean, the YouTube and access to, etc. Okay. Well, it says it in the script. You wrote the script. I'm just repeating what it says. Anyway, check out our channel, press all the buttons, you know what to do, hit the like, leave a comment, subscribe, all those terms. Great. Right, Eric, trivia, what have you got for us?
Before we go on trivia, our esteemed colleague David Langale cannot be here, unfortunately, for our last show with the season.
Yeah,
I didn't know David was still with us. I thought he may have gone to a different place.
I think he's gone to a different podcast.
Yes, I mean, he was training for a player to be named later.
No, minor league options.
He has a valid excuse of why he can't be here today, because instead of being on a baseball podcast with us, he has to go see his son play in an important game in Little League Baseball that he's playing this afternoon, New York time. So
Little League Baseball in November?
I don't ask me. So I guess it's a New York thing. I don't know. One thing I also want to point out is an amazing World Series. An amazing final for baseball. The Tigers won the whole thing. Is that great?
The Hanshin Tigers.
The Hanshin Tigers won the Nippon in Japan.
Professional Baseball League.
Because you can't call the World Series in Japan. It's Nippon Professional Baseball League. They won the whole thing. And in Osaka, they beat the Oryx Buffaloes. And the curse of Kentucky Fried Chicken has finally been lifted.
It's not the curse of Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's the curse of Colonel Sanders.
Correct. The Colonel Sanders curse has been lifted, Johnny. You've heard the curse of the Billy Goat. You've heard the Black Sox curse. The
curse of Bambino.
Curse of Bambino. I didn't know the Black Sox had a curse.
Sorry, the White Sox had a curse. The Black Sox, White Sox curse. Thank you. It's called the Black Sox curse. That makes sense. It's a valid curse. The Black Sox curse.
Okay. What? Okay.
Anyways, so the hilarious thing about this whole KFC, aka Colonel Sanders curse in Japan, was 40 years ago, I believe it was, 38 years ago, the last time Hanshin Tigers won the whole thing in Japan, their fans went rampant in Osaka, and they went to a KFC, and they stole a life-size statue of Colonel Sanders. And they paraded him around the town. Legend goes because he looked like Randy Bass of the Hanshin Tigers, and that they sort of just picked him up for the hell of it. They paraded down the streets, and they threw the statue of Colonel Sanders in the canal. After that, the Hanshin Tigers were absolutely terrible. They were the 18-year losing streak, and they couldn't win anything since. But they finally broke the curse of Colonel Sanders last night. They actually even had to like retrieve the colonel from the canal in 2009 just to see if it could break the curse. And it's on display at the KFC headquarters in Osaka.
Now, just to be clear, they did go to three championships and lost in three championships. They so it did. Wasn't like they were always terrible.
No, what they were killed for 18 years. And then
what I love about this is that it is a real cultural totem in Japan. If you play the game Sonic Adventure, they have a whole thing where they have a statue in front of a restaurant, and you're warned not to throw the statue in the water or bad things will happen. So it's become more than just, you know, sort of this niche baseball curse. And now it's gone, though.
Fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
It's curse. Who'd have thunk?
Got phoned up, by the way, by Times Radio. They wanted me to talk about the fact that it was the anniversary of the Curse of the Bambino being ended in the 2004 World Series. So I actually did something on Times Radio with regards. And as a result of my research, I was looking into what was that road sign, JC, that became a big part of the story? What was it? It was reverse curve or something, and somebody, some graffiti, and that's become a big part of. And there's somebody put a "the" in the middle, so reverse the curse, and no one wanted to change it, and the local authorities kept changing it back, and then the graffiti artists would come and do it again in the middle of the night, and that became a big part of Boston efforts to impact on the Curse of the Bambino. This is obviously going back a while, since that curse is long over. But it's what is it about American sport? They're so superstitious.
I think all sports are superstitious now. I mean, I feel like every athlete has their superstitions. Yeah.
Lucky pants. Did you have lucky pants? Did you not change it for 10 weeks?
I was really not superstitious as a player.
Okay. Yeah. That might explain it then.
Yeah, but that's why I wasn't any good. If only I had embraced superstition.
Okay. All right,
trivia question.
Eric, trivia. Go on, man.
Now, meanwhile, back in North America, the Texas Rangers won the World Series. And on that Texas Rangers roster was none other than Will Smith. No, I'm not going to do a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air joke. Don't worry about it. Thing is, Will Smith, he's a first player to win the World Series
for three different teams.
Correct, in consecutive years.
Is that it? Do I get the point?
No. So Will Smith has won the World Series in three consecutive seasons with three different teams.
Yep.
Now the thing is, my question to you is, who was the last player to have played for three consecutive teams? So he's three consecutive seasons for three different teams. Now, that obviously, Will Smith, the first one to win three in a row. But who was the last player to have played three seasons in a row on three World Series?
We understand three different World Series teams.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. So three consecutive World Series, but for three different teams, but he obviously didn't win all 3 years.
Correct, okay. Because Will Smith is the first one to do that.
Right? Yeah, which I knew and I mentioned and impressed everybody. Okay.
And because it's our last show, I'm going to make it fun. I'm going to give you four options.
Okay, love that. Okay. Even less likely I'm going to get it right.
So my question to you is it A, Don Baylor? Or is it B, Eric Hinsky?
Oh, Lord.
Or is it C, Jock Peterson?
Ooh.
Or is it D, Ben Zobrist?
Oh.
So there you go. So there's your choice. Who's
okay. Okay, I think I may know this one.
World Series, and so it's.
I think I know this one.
Don Pillery, Eric Kinski, Jock Peterson, or Ben Zobrist? Answer later on in the show.
Fantastic stuff. Right, let's move this on, guys. It's time for the first batter. Batter up, it is the Fall Classic. We're going to talk World Series. We're going to talk the aftermath, the big stories. Commiserations, obviously, to the D-backs. I was thrilled to see them get to the World Series. But obviously, commiseration completely blown away by the Texas Rangers, who were, by the way, 33-1 to win the World Series about midway through the season. I know.
And I'm going to throw you a bone. Why do you know, Gouldy?
I know, JC, because as you know, I had a tenner each way on them, 33-1. Another story, let's move on. Anyway, we'll have a look. Five-game series, a very dominant. Rangers ran away with it in the end. Split, obviously, the first two games in Texas, which I thought was a great result for the D-backs. If you're away, that's all you want, isn't it, JC? You just want to split those first two games. But then it just went, you know, no apologies for my language, completely tits up after that. They go back to Arizona, where the atmosphere was amazing, and yet they scored one run in game three, no runs in game five. And even though they got seven runs in game four, complete blowout because the Rangers had 11 and they lost that. So they lost three straight. So first thing I want to ask you about, JC, just looking back on this World Series, is just how good was Adolis Garcia when you consider how little was given up to get him? I mean, the guy was off the charts.
Yeah, when I think of Adolis Garcia, I also think of Randy Rosarena. And the reason for that is they're both two postseason superstars, both of whom were originally found by the St. Louis Cardinals. And the Cardinals gave them away for pittances. You know, if you're a Cardinals fan, you're probably just absolutely, you know, taking a cold shower because you're so bitter. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Garcia was great. But I think what was so impressive about the victory for the Rangers is that he got injured. That when your talisman as out of the lineup, things can turn very quickly. Yeah. Yet the Rangers were able to continue to be opportunistic through that whole series. Whenever they were given an opening, they were able to score. It was the exact opposite with the Diamondbacks, who were left runners on base, who had opportunities and just couldn't put it together. It just felt like the Rangers were a fated team, a team that, you know, was destined to this, because every time the door opened, they walked through.
Yeah, it is amazing that, isn't it? That sense of momentum, that sense of inevitability. You just look at a team, you just think, yeah, this is their postseason. This is what is meant to happen. It doesn't matter what hardships they face. I was looking at his numbers. I mean, what a postseason. You mentioned the fact he got injured. I think it was game three. 8 home runs in 15 games in the postseason. 8. That's like a home run every other game. That's extraordinary. And in 1-6 at-bat stretch to end the American League Championship Series, he homered 3 times in 6 at-bats and drove in 9 runs, which not surprisingly gave him the ALCS MVP award. Talking of other MVPs, Zach Gallen. I remember James Holden, our very good friend and very knowledgeable baseball man. He said to me years ago that Zach Gallen was going to be a superstar. And I've never felt that he's quite achieved that ace status. But there were moments, particularly in the game five, when he's going into the seventh inning with a no-hitter in a must-win game for the D-backs, where he was doing everything and getting no run support.
Yeah, the thing about Zach Gallen is his consistency. And that's why he has never sort of risen to that elite starter status. And the thing is, I think that he has times where he gets overamped, where he starts overthrowing his fastball a little bit. He loses a little bit of the command. He doesn't need to throw 97. He can dial that back down to 95. What makes him great is not that electric fastball, which is important and helpful. It's his curveball. His curveball is amazing. It's one of the best in the game. And when he can set that up by throwing for command with his fastball, he can be amongst the top 5-7 pitchers in baseball. And we saw that in the World Series, particularly in that game where he did have that no-hitter going. It's just he needs to figure out how to do that every time out, or at least, you know, 7 out of every times out.
Big question as well. This is certainly one of the big talking points of this, is the whole decision to bring Bruce Bochy back. I think he retired, was it in 2019? I think a lot of people were a bit sort of quizzical. And yet the man has become a proven winner. Obviously, 3 wins with the Giants back in 2010, 12 and 14. It just seems now when he reaches World Series, there's only one result. I mean, were you surprised that Texas brought him back to manage the team?
No, I mean, I think that it was more a question of whether Boach wanted to come back and manage himself. So yeah. I think as soon as he made that decision, I can't imagine there was any team who wouldn't consider him. His success in game sevens is unparalleled. He's never lost a game seven. What I love is the European connection, of course, which is that he determined that he wanted to go back to managing in the World Baseball Classic qualifier for France, the one that Great Britain won to get into the main draw of the World Baseball Classic. But he had such a great time being back in the dugout that it really sort of propelled him. And this was the perfect type of chemistry for that team, is that you had a mixture of players who were sort of young, up and coming, the Adolis Garcia types, but then guys who had been there before, Nate Evaldi, Corey Sager, guys who had World Series experience, had success in the World Series. And having that combination of the enthusiasm of being there with the people who know how to get you over the top, and then a manager who had won three World Series, really great combination. A lot of credit goes to Chris Young, former Major League pitcher, who's now effectively the, they don't call him general manager now, whatever they call him, you know, chief baseball operations guru, whatever. But the head of their baseball team in the front office is Chris Young. Had done just an amazing job in terms of putting together the staff, because you can't forget Mike Maddux, Greg Maddux's brother, is the pitching coach, one of the best pitching coaches in baseball. I mean, you see guys like Josh Spores, who was throwing on the mound, throwing a strikeout in the last out. This is not a guy you'd expect pitching the last out of a clinching World Series game. And a lot of credit goes to Mike Maddux for that.
Just before we move on from the whole Bruce Bochy conversation, let me ask you this. His career numbers, I mean, you mentioned it, unbelievable experience. I mean, he's had so many years experience. But his career numbers, he's got a 499 win record. So he's almost exactly 50% win record in the regular season. But when you go to his postseason numbers, 57 wins represents a 606 win record in the postseason. Does that, particularly when you think Texas had, what was it, 95 losses last season, and now they're World Series champion, do those sort of numbers make him one of the all-time greats?
Yeah, I mean, I think the World Series championships, multiple teams in different leagues, not as big a deal now because the leagues are effectively the same in terms of strategy. But I say it all the time. I know I'm a broken record on this for years, which is that managing is the one role in baseball where there's no real metric to determine. You know, they have the Pythagorean theorem to determine whether they're wins above or below what they should be getting. But ultimately, it's really hard to determine what makes a great manager. It's a really subjective thing. And I think that when you look at postseason, getting through that second season, getting all the way to the finish line, if there's anything that you can be objective about, it really is that. Because even regular season, if you have a crap team, you could end up losing, you know, you could be 25 games under 500, ruins your overall win-loss record. But postseason, you know that you have a good team. That's established because you've made it to the postseason. You can then pull the strings under the hyper bright lamp of the postseason and get all the way to the World Series and win it. I mean, that's hard to beat.
I'll just close this conversation off, and I'm sure, Eric, this is something you already know, that Bruce Bochy has one of the largest heads in Major League Baseball.
Eight and a third, baby.
He was actually nicknamed Houston Headley because it was so big. His hat size is 8 1/8. Eight and an eighth. And apparently when he joined the Mets in 1982, when he was a player, they didn't actually have a helmet that would fit him. So they had to stand out for ones that they were using in the minors, which are the only ones that were big enough to get on his head. I tell you what, he's a man who deserves to have a big head because he's had an amazing season and he's had an amazing career. Okay, let's talk about Max Scherzer next. You look at the numbers of his performances in the postseason. You just question, did Texas bring him back too early? Because he really struggled early on. And then by the time his last pitch on October the 30th, then he was phenomenal. Mind you, they only gave him three innings. They were trying to just muscle a few innings out of him each time. But he gave up five runs in four innings in his Texas-Houston game on October the 18th. Gave up a couple in 2.2 innings against Texas, against Houston again in the American League Championship Series. So is there a question mark about whether they tried to go too early with Max Scherzer and potentially could have done him a bit of damage because he clearly wasn't ready?
I mean, first off, I promise you he was instigating to get back into the rotation. I can't imagine, you know, he had said that after they won the first series. You know, he was like, I'm hungover, but I'm still going to throw the, you know, the live batters because I need to be ready. He wanted it. And, you know, it's hard to say no to pitchers with that type of experience in the postseason, right? Kershaw had issues. The Dodgers went with him to bad effect in these particular playoffs because you just feel like when you have a track record with a pitcher, it's hard to say no, especially if they want the ball. And I think that was the situation here.
Okay, World Series MVP, Corey Seager, boys. I want both your opinions. Worthy winner?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I guess he could have given it to Eovaldi if it wasn't for that. But I mean, the numbers don't lie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one aspect that put Seager over the top over Eovaldi was his defense. And there was a lot of comments about, you know, just how solid he was at shortstop, right? A player up the middle who gives you that kind of production and plays great defense in World Series, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Homered in three of the five games, went 6-for-21, 286. Drew three walks as well, 6 RBI, 6 runs scored. Pretty damn good, wasn't it?
And broke up the no-hitter in the final game, right? Like, yeah, he was the one who broke the very seal to get the momentum going in that championship game.
And had Garcia's, you know, remain healthy, and then, you know, we'd be talking about Garcia as the MVP instead of Seager. But
and Seager, two MVPs in World Series.
That's right.
Because obviously he was on the losing side, so nobody's going to talk about him. But I've been a massive fan of Ketel Marte and always expected him to really become one of the leading players in baseball. I've chosen him in so many fantasy baseball teams. It's never quite lived up to his potential. But this guy had an amazing postseason.
Yeah. I mean, I love that team. It's a really good team. Perdomo at shortstop was fantastic. You know, you had some veterans like Longoria. Corbin Carroll is, you know, a star in the making. And I'm a big Torrey Lovello fan. So a little aside, when I was a kid, a young teenager, he was playing baseball at UCLA. And I would go after school on Fridays, and I would walk from my school to the UCLA field, which I ended up playing on when I was in college. And I would go watch him play. And he was the nicest guy. He was an LA product. And I was so thrilled for him to pull this team all the way through to the World Series on an 84-win season to get all the way there. So a lot of credit to him as well.
Batting average, .387. Obviously, he won the NLCS MVP award. And I know that he set an MLB record. His hitting streak, postseason hitting streak, was ended in game five of the series. But he's now finished with the longest hit streak in baseball postseason history of 20 games.
20.
Guys, that is unbelievable. 20 games in the highest pressure. The most
even in the postseason, though. And that's right. Even the regular season, that would have been impressive. But in the postseason, exactly.
Okay, well, talking point number four, guys. I mean, this is the one that depresses the hell out of me. So I'm glad Eric's left it slightly down the league so we could focus on more positive stuff. But the ratings for the Rangers, for the D-Bank in the World Series, were the worst ever, with an average of 9.11 million. And that's compared to 9.95 million in 2020, which, of course, was the COVID World Series, which was the previous record holder. First of all, before I get to you guys, we're going to find out from our esteemed and much-missed colleague, Mr. David Lengel, what his views are on this. He sent us a video, and this is his point of view.
Major League Baseball is getting bad ratings during the World Series and the NLCS and the ALCS and everything else for a couple of reasons. First, the super obvious is that we know that television landscape is so super diversified now that MLB can't command what it used to command, and that goes for just about everything except for NFL football, which destroys everyone and everything in its path. But I think the real change is that baseball has become much more of a regional game. They don't have a problem getting people through turnstiles. Increasingly, they're going to, down the road, depend much more on their gait. They always depend on their gait, but maybe they're going to depend on it a little bit more than they used to. It's a very competitive world. It's a very local world for baseball. So if you don't have good stories to tell, I don't really think Texas is a very compelling story. Arizona, despite the fact that they only won 84 games, is not a very compelling story, not a very compelling market. not a team with a very interesting history. The Rangers don't have an interesting history. So the stories aren't that good. So I think you see less people watching. But the game is fine. A lot of people watch. A lot of people go. A lot of people care. It's just more of a local thing. And it's not football, and it will never be football. You know, it just has to hope to compete with video games at this point. And that's okay. Life goes on.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, it is a slight... I mean, good for Dave, actually. You know, Dave's usually Mr. Negative, but it's interesting because I saw something about one of the top executives at Fox basically saying that, yes, that's a negative that the numbers are down, but the positive is that it's two new teams and it's good for baseball, and you're going to take that. They're not big, well-supported sides nationally in America. Their fan base is very much localized. They're not the big storied Yankees, Red Sox, et cetera, et cetera. So inevitably, the numbers are going to be down. There's got to be a balance, isn't there, JC? There's still got to be concern about the decline.
Definitely. And I mean, I think first and foremost, David's right. These are two teams that are very difficult to market. I have this theory that any team that represents itself, not with a city, but with a region or a state, is never beloved. It's like you're trying to do too much. Colorado Rockies don't have a big following. When the Angels were the California Angels, meh. I mean, they've never sort of recovered from that. I think the same was true with the Florida Marlins and these, you know, teams, Arizona. I mean, name it after the city, call it Phoenix. Really try and build in that localized grassroots. That's where you get that kind of even greater level of fandom. But I think the one place where I kind of disagree with David is the importance of television, because I think what we're missing is, I realize these are the shop window big events. The reason baseball is such a marketable type of product for television is because of the pure number of games that they play that puts everyone else to shame, right? 162 games in that regular season gives a lot of product to, you know, the regional sports nets, to the networks. So they're always going to have a place because you can stick them on over and over again. So they're like sort of the workman version, you know, the journeyman version of television. They may not get, you know, the Super Bowl ratings, but they're going to get you something consistently. And so I think baseball's safe from a TV perspective, but you know, it's disappointing. It's disappointing because it really speaks to baseball as part of America's national consciousness, right? That's really what it's talking to. And it's diminishing in that role. And part of it, as Dave said, is that the sporting landscape has changed and we're very splintered. But part of it is just, you know, baseball's got to figure out a way to really create that galvanizing water cooler conversation. And it may struggle to do so.
Eric, before you even put this into the script and before, you know, we agreed that we needed to discuss it, on my behind home plate fantasy league that we got some great followers of baseball, passionate guys, they brought the subject up. Ed, who's one of the most contributive, and his lovely girlfriend, Lucy, Ed basically put up an article about the reduced numbers, and he just went, so much for all this expanded playoff nonsense being good for TV. He's a massive purist. He wants to go back to the days of American League, National League, no divisions, whoever finishes top, World Series, Bosch. That's a proper World Series in his eyes. Rolf came back and said, basically, Ed, there's no point in going up against the NFL. A preseason NFL exhibition game got more viewers than a Yankees-Red Sox game did this year. 100-game season, and this is his view, this is Rolf. He thinks we need to go to a 100-game season, not a 162. July and August for expanded four-round playoffs, all best of seven, and done and dusted before the NFL season even starts. Baseball is a summer sport, not an autumn sport. And then he put, P.S., show me the way to the commissioner's office. Ed came back and said, players' union would never go for it, but we do need to get back to the World Series happening at the start of October, not the end. What's your view on those points, guys?
That's an interesting viewpoint, but I think it's crap. The thing is, everyone, the division series and the ALCS and LCS got record numbers. So to actually get rid of the playoff format as it is now, no, as cruel as it is, I know that it's not great to have all these teams like the Atlanta Braves, who didn't make it to the to the next round. The playoffs in itself, division series, championship series, got record numbers. So it is all reliant on who finishes in the final two.
Yeah, it's all conjecture, right? Because to the point that was made, Goldie, it's not just the Players Association, Major League Baseball, the money's in the aggregate product. So yep. It's having as many games as possible to put on. Even if the ratings are lower, you have more games. And that's part of the reason, right, that the NFL gets higher ratings. They play 18 game season. Yeah, you know, you're playing 23 games or whatever it is compared to, including the playoffs, 180 games. So, you know, it's easier to get those high ratings for the limited type of, you know, exposure that you're going to need to get people watching you. But, you know, I like the postseason. I like the uncertainty of it. I think it's fun, but it is weird when you play 162 games and it only has a relatively minor impact. You know, it does cut down the number of teams. So I'm definitely torn with that. I think the other issue, and one reason that I think people are sort of about the World Series, there was a bullpen game in the World Series. The Arizona Diamondbacks threw a bullpen game, which means, right, that they had, you know, all their relievers coming in. Like, how do you get excited? How do you get romantic about that? Right. They say, how can you not be romantic about baseball? How could you be romantic about a bullpen game? It's just, and that's part of the problem. And I know you got to win, but like when you're starting to see that, you don't feel that level of drama.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of people were complaining about it wasn't stellar pitching. And that's the way pitching has been going lately in Major League Baseball, period. Gone are the days of complete games, unlike in Japan. And finally, we were just mentioning that Nippon championship series where
the Yamamoto.
Yamamoto in game six, 138 pitches and 14 strikeouts, complete game, and a game six. Will we ever see a game six, game seven, you know, situation where a pitcher plays a complete game ever?
Yeah, I mean, the question becomes, right, with Zach Gallen. Would he have been allowed to go all the way to throw the no-no if he hadn't been able to keep it? I'd say no. Can't imagine in today's major.
Pitchers are made of stronger stuff in the old days, I say. But that's the way the cookie
crumbles. Is Yamamoto en route to the MLB?
How many years does he have to stay in the Japanese league again, Josh, until you're allowed to leave?
I'm pretty sure he's allowed to leave now.
I think it's 7 years.
There's a lot of rumors that he's going to be in Johnny Gould's fantasy baseball team next year. That's what I'm hearing.
Jinx already in play. Moving on.
Okay. Second batter. We've talked enough about World Series and all the talking points. Let's do a season recap, boys. The first thing I want to ask you is a lot of rule changes before the shift, pitch clock, pickoffs, bigger bases. First up, JC, what's your general response to success? Thumbs up. Thumbs down.
No. Solid thumbs up. I think it made the game faster. I think the pacing has helped. I think that it made it a more fan-friendly game. I'm pretty much supportive across the board. I wonder when we're going to get to the robot umps. I think that may be kind of next in line.
Yeah. And how would you feel about that? The human element. I've always liked the human element.
I have tremendous ambivalence. If you went back to our old show, Goldie, I argued vociferously for the umpires for that human element. But man, you know, getting it wrong at the wrong time is a bit tough. Though I've seen some studies that even with, you know, all the cameras and the robot, they don't always get it right either. That, you know, if you have something slightly misaligned. So, you know, I hate to see people losing things based on a human error for someone who's not playing the game. But I love the humanity of umpires. I mean, the umpire is arguing with the managers, it's part of the fun 100%. Of the game, right?
And Eric, as a Hammers fan, I mean, you obviously watch your Premier League football. I mean, there's so many stories this season that VAR, which ultimately is technology, you know, we're still having the arguments. You got Arteta going crazy that they lost to Newcastle this weekend and that it was a mistake. And that was a combination of a human mistake and a technical mistake. I mean,
exactly. And robot umps would just be opening up a new avenue for more mistakes, in my opinion, as well. But otherwise, other rule changes that happened this season. I'm with Josh. I was very skeptical about it all, about the pitch clock. Will it work? It cuts down on the drama. But the one thing, and I'm a convert, it speeds up the game. But one thing I'm still on the fence about and lean towards, like, is the pick off to first stipulation. That, and I know that you mocked me about this, that it's sort of, should there be an asterisk on Acuña's stolen base records this year? Because we're seeing a lot more stolen bases because players are not allowed to throw to first and pick do the pickoff moves as much.
I mean, yeah, but Eric, I mean, that's like saying before 1968, we put an asterisk there because the mounds were higher for pitchers and they had more strikeouts. The game changes incrementally over time. And I think one of the great facades of baseball is that the statistics can be considered seamlessly over time. It's not true anyway, right? What happens with the players you play against, with the rules that you have in the first part of the 20th century is not the same in the first half of the 21st century. So that's out the door anyway. I think if it makes it a good product, that's what we got to be hoping for right now. If you love baseball, you just want to see it more fun, more dynamic, and of the era.
How about you, Johnny? Are you a convert with all the rule changes?
I particularly love the speeding up of the game. I think that was vital, and I've really enjoyed that aspect of it. I like anything that encourages players to steal bases because I don't just want to watch a pitching duel or see home runs hit. I want to see teams manufacture. That's why I like the D-backs. They were stealing bases, trying to get advanced players. I love that stuff. That to me is the essence of the game, and it gives it all those layers that make it so special and so unique. So anything that encourages that, I'm in full favor of. And obviously, you both know I am not a fan of an asterisk anywhere at any time in any aspect of life.
I prefer
You're the
overlooks.
most black and white person ever, Gordy.
Exactly.
It's all or nothing. But
Exactly.
small ball is sexy. I agree with you. Bunts, stolen
Yeah.
bases,
Love it.
singles. I love it. Yeah.
Love it. Because you said it yourself, buddy. You know, you said you weren't born with the most talent, but no one tried harder. Nobody was more of a gamer. If you take that away, those little differences, those little aspects of the game, I maybe I'm just an old git who's, you know, romantic, but I just think that the game would lose its heart. I love that stuff. Love it.
Yeah,
Okay.
I'm not a
Cool.
big fan of the. I'm not a big fan of the three true outcomes, right? The walk, the strikeout, or the home run. That's
Yeah.
boring baseball.
I cannot agree more, Josie. Okay. And this is really interesting because this leads in quite nicely to my next big story, which is a real sadness for me. We're saying goodbye to one of the great characters of the game. We're saying goodbye to Dusty Baker. Now, why is that sad? Well, obviously, it's sad because he's such a great character and such an amazing career. But potential Hall of Famer. Potential? Don't give me that.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitive Hall of Fame manager. Dusty Baker has said that criticism from 30-year-olds and bloggers and tweeters have played a big part in his decision to retire from the Houston Astros and from Major League Baseball at the end of the team's postseason run. And that really saddens me. That's a modern development. If it's impacting on somebody of his credentials, I think that's really sad.
Yeah, it's hugely sad. I mean, Eric and I have met him on numerous occasions. One of the great guys. You know, it's amazing that people like him and Bruce Bochy can still command the clubhouse at their age, right? They're not, you know, it's a totally different era, but they get baseball in such a way. And it is tragic, as you said, Gouldie. I agree 100% that, you know, he said that if I could just show up 45 minutes before the game, do the lineup, coach, manage the game, go home, I could have another 3, 4 years left in me. But
Yeah.
it's all the other BS. It's the press conferences. It's the gotcha moments that everyone has. It's fine to be critical of the manager. And I think it was easier when it was just mainstream media, but now you're just getting it from all angles. And he's
Yeah.
earned the right to say, I'm done with it. I don't dispute that, but it's sad.
And you know, the point he makes as well that they're just going to win it every time, or they're going to win their division every time, as though it's just an absolute walk in the park. And the point he makes is a really good one. They forget they did win the divisional title. They beat the Texas Rangers out, who went on to win the World Series. And yet all he's getting is criticism because they didn't win it and weren't 10 games clear. They won 90 games, for God's sake. You know, and they won it all last season. It
I mean,
really royally pisses me off.
the hard part about social media is everyone gets a microphone. Everyone thinks they know. That was the one thing about at least mainstream media. The people who were beat reporters, some of them were a-holes, don't get me wrong, and like had grudges and all that, but they went to every game. They paid really careful attention. They spoke to the players. They were knowledgeable. Now you have like, oh, you know, I read half a book on baseball and I watched, you know, 3 or 4 games a month. And let me tell you the way it should be. And these people have pretty big soapboxes in order to make their arguments. And I can see why people who have been lifers in the game get a little fatigued from that. It's not that those people don't have a right to say whatever they want to say, but I understand how people who really know the game are just a little bit like, you know, I'm over it.
Yeah. I mean, it just will not tarnish his legacy or his career. Hats off to Dusty Baker. You were nice to all of us, to each and every one on this show. We love you to bits and we wish you well in your retirement.
Yeah. And a well-deserved retirement indeed. Okay, moving on, talking of retirement, Nelson Cruz has decided to retire after 19 seasons in MLB. Of course, won the 2011 ALCS MVP award with the Rangers. Apparently, he's not completely retiring from baseball, boys. And I rather like this because he's actually going to play this winter in the Dominican Professional Baseball League. And that will be his farewell tour as a slugger. I like that. I like the fact he's going home, you know. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's not ironic, but a little coincidental that his, you know, he announces his retirement after the Rangers finally get that World Series championship. If you remember, he was playing right field when they lost to the St. Louis Cardinals, I believe it was 2011. And he had sort of a miscue in right field that if he had have made the play, they would have won the World Series and cost, you know, an extra decade plus for Rangers fans to wait until they finally got their championship. Great career. I know Eric's going to ask Hall of Famer. I'm going to say absolutely not. It's an example of different eras. If he had played in the 1950s and hit 460 plus home runs, first ballot Hall of Famer, but we have a better understanding of how he fits in now. You know, a player who was not a great defensive player, very, very good player. He deserves to be in the Hall of Very Good, not quite the Hall of Fame.
Seems pretty tough. 7-time All-Star, 4-time Silver Slugger. As I've already mentioned, 2011 American League Championship Series MVP. And in 50 playoff games during his career, slashed an average 278, 18 home runs, 38 RBIs. Seemed to do pretty well in those postseasons he was involved in. Over 1,000 runs scored, 1,325 RBIs, 464 home runs. Yeah, you've got to be a damn good player to reach the Hall of Fame.
I hate to go full anorak on you, Gouldy, but look at his WAR, right? Like, okay. You know, 49 WAR, something like that. I mean, he's not even close.
42.2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nowhere even close to what you would need relative. And part of that is because he was a one-dimensional player and a great player. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't want to besmirch what is a fantastic career, just not a Hall of Fame career.
And that's the thing. If you look at Nelson Cruz's numbers, and then I'm trying to not argue, but sort of like, oh, does Joey Votto belong in the Hall of Fame? No. Then if Joey Votto doesn't get it, neither does Nelson Cruz.
So. I think Votto has a better argument, though. You know, as a good defensive first baseman, you know, his on base percentage was through the roof, right? Like, I mean, Votto was sort of one of the elites at that. I'm not saying he is a Hall of Famer, but I think he's vastly more a borderline.
True. And latest news is that the Cincinnati Reds have optioned him not to take him on for another contract. So will he retire fully, or will he actually play with one more team for one more season somewhere? Rumors are Toronto or Detroit.
There you go. Okay. Well, we wish him well. As you say, great career, regardless of whether it's deemed to be Hall of Fame worthy. Now, talking of somebody who, if he could continue as he has in recent seasons, is definitely Hall of Fame potential, is, of course, Shohei Ohtani. I mean, it's almost like the exact conversation we were having last season. Where next? Now, my understanding, JC, is that the Angels, as obviously the team he's been playing for, they have like this 5-day window when they can try and negotiate a contract moving forward to keep him. And after that, then everyone else could get stuck in. Everyone's saying it's inevitable. He's not going to be an Angel. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everyone on this one. I think that Artie Moreno's going to throw him as big a boatload of money as he could offer. And it's not going to be enough because I don't think it's the money for Ohtani. He wants to be on a contender. So I think that he's going to pass on that and try and find a team that he thinks that he can contend with. And keep in mind, you know, he's going to be coming off of surgery. He's not going to be a pitcher for really this next season. He's an offensive player. He's still a fantastic offensive player. But it'll be interesting to see where other teams sort of value him as a result.
Because this, yeah, this is the point, isn't it, about the injury, that he will be able to return next season as a hitter, but we're not going to see him as a pitcher for at least another season. I mean, I was reading up about it as well. He's basically sustained another tear in the ulnar collateral ligament in his right elbow, and he's undergone officially a second Tommy John surgery. But they're also saying it's not specifically Tommy John's. It's sort of like a hybrid version of it. And the agent's been very, very sort of vague in his description and his explanation, which therefore leaves massive doubt and gray area. And when you're talking about hundreds of million dollar contracts, it seems extraordinary that people are going to be asked to make a punt on somebody who is, without a shadow of a doubt, the best player of recent seasons. But there's this massive question mark.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was just a second Tommy John surgery on the ulnar collateral, the first one, there tends to be actually really good bounce back. There's a lot of questions when you have to do it a second time. There have definitely been pitchers who have come back from dual TJ surgeries, but it is a little bit more of a question mark. But put that aside, right? A power speed combination that he brings to the plate, literally, is, you know, elite. So I think that there's money there for him, and I think there's money at the top of what anyone's ever made just based on that, with the feeling that the pitching would just be a bonus. The question is just how much more, how elite is it? Is it the greatest of all time by, you know, one exponent, by two exponents? We'll see.
Is he winning the AL MVP award this season?
I think so. I mean, he won the Players' Choice Award, right? So he won the American League Players' Choice. So the players thought that he should be the MVP. You know, the voters for the actual award, the Writers Association, always tend to be a little more wonky. But I think the numbers still put him as number one.
And the rumors are, and it is, again, just only rumors, that the interested parties will be Texas Rangers, San Francisco Giants, and the Toronto Blue Jays will try to throw money at him. Toronto Blue Jays allegedly are going to make a $50 million salary dump on various players, including Kiermaier, to make room for Ohtani. Question mark? Again, only rumors. Moving on.
Okay. Well, interesting. That's the rumor, because the article I read had 10 teams still in the hunt. Red Sox, Cubs, Angels, which we've already said isn't going to happen. Dodgers, Mets, Yankees.
So a third of the league. Basically,
basically a third of the league. Yeah. I noticed there's no reference to the Atlanta Braves. They're not in the market, but there you go. Right, moving on. Very sad news for the passing of Frank Howard, four-time All-Star and Washington Senators legend, has passed away at the age of 87. Well, guys, you know I'm relatively new to the game. My real interest didn't start till I started doing the show on Channel 5 back in 1997. So talk to me, JC, about the former All-Star outfielder, first baseman, Frank Howard.
Yeah, I mean, a gentle giant, 6'7". Now, 6'7" nowadays, you might have a few players, more players. Back then, I've seen pictures of him just towering over the other players that he played with. But he was the definition of a gentle giant, a real just civil man, great power hitter, certainly played in a number of places, and was very beloved. He managed for 3 years, a couple with the Padres, one with the Mets, didn't have much success as a manager. But it's really sad because, you know, we lost Brooks Robinson not too long ago. Now we're losing Frank Howard. We're losing some of the great gentlemen of an era of the game. So ashamed. Again, not a Hall of Famer, sort of kind of actually similar to Nelly Cruz, and, you know, just a pure power hitter. But nevertheless, a player who deserves a tremendous doff of the cap for what he brought to the game.
And also he's immortalized in the Danny Kaye song, the Dodgers song, because people always associate him as a Washington Senators legend. And one season as a Texas Ranger, because when the Senators moved to Texas, become a Texas Ranger. But he was, you know, he was pretty handy when he was the Dodgers, after they moved from Brooklyn to L.A.
You know, he was also drafted by the NBA's Philadelphia Warriors in 1958. So he had the option to go pro as a basketball player, but chose to stick with baseball. So, and obviously a good decision, because he went to the Dodgers and won Rookie of the Year in 1960. And was considered for the NL's Most Valuable Player in 62. So, rest in peace. Great player. Right, let's move it on. Okay, banner number three. We're going to have a look back over the season. And I'm going to ask the boys, what was their favourite? What was their standout moment of 2023? So before we go to JC, before we go to Warwick, let's hear from Big Dave.
So obviously the Mets season didn't turn out the way we thought it would. At the start of the season, we thought they maybe had a chance to make the playoffs and maybe make a run at the World Series, but they completely fell apart, and then they traded everybody. And so the highlight was actually getting these elite prospects back for this garbage that they had, these old worn-out pitchers, which is great. But the thing that really stood out for me this season is actually, believe it or not, at times seeing the Yankees in last place is just like smoking crack or shooting heroin. It felt so good to see them in last place and to watch their season completely and totally fall apart. That was enough for me. So seeing them in last place, I consider that to be a season of success.
There you have it. There's Dave. What a surprise. Not exactly what we were expecting.
I'd love to know how Dave knows about like all that drug use. So, you know, he's talking about it's, you know, similar to smoking crack. I'm like, tell us more. I want to hear more about his life. Because, who knew?
Well, you and me, the cleanest living individuals, the most pathetic front of the class, teacher's pets the world's ever known.
By the way, I just, public service announcement, kids, don't do drugs.
Seriously.
That's my favorite part of Love Actually. When the great the pop star, I've forgotten the actor's name,
doesn't matter. Moving on.
Bill Nye.
Bill Nye. Yeah, do you remember he's on the index and he's like, you know, don't do drugs, kids, because if you're a pop star, they give them to you for free. I love that. Anyway. So Eric, what about you? What's your standout memory of 2023?
Besides the World Baseball Classic, I want to say, but obviously I was actually physically there, but it sort of, you know, got me ready in time for the baseball season that we already had, you know, exciting baseball in March, including GB doing amazingly well and just an unbelievable World Baseball Classic final. So that's probably my standout memory.
Good choice, man. JC?
Yeah, I mean, great call, Eric. I mean, Great Britain this whole season, right? They won a silver medal at the Euros. They won a silver medal at the under-23s. It has been, probably in my lifetime, the greatest year for Great Britain baseball. That's definitely one. But for me, and you know I'm the sentimental bastard of this show, it was the London series. And not so much for the games, which was lovely. It's always great to see Major League Baseball. But, you know, baseball is about the relationships you build and being able to see the two of you, being able to see friends, being able to just be in the UK watching baseball. It was just unparalleled as to what a special memory it was.
And you had Bill Murray as well.
I was going to say, the Bill Murray moment with you standing like 5 feet away as he's...
I was in the booth. I actually wasn't next to him. Drew Spencer was him and Craig Doyle were with Bill Murray. I was in the booth with Fletch. So I'm in the shot because they cut to us, but I didn't get to actually hang with the god.
Okay, it was funny. It was really fun. I mean, guys, obviously, I goes without saying that particularly how well British baseball did this season, real standout year for them. The London series was great fun. I had a great day that day. It was great to see you guys after the game. I went there, obviously, with James Holden and Alan McKinley, the legendary deputy editor of the Mirror Sport, who's a huge baseball fan, best mates of ours. And that was just a cracking day. But you've both mentioned those, so I've got to have to move on. My highlights, my standout memories, is the fact that I was fighting to avoid coming last in both head-to-head fantasy baseball teams. And I succeeded in both. I didn't come last in either. I came second last. That was a real standout achievement, and that was a standout memory. But my genuine standout memory is I make no apology for this, guys. You know how much I love my Atlanta Braves. And Ronald Acuña Jr. is now right up there in my top five players of all time. I absolutely love watching this guy play. He personifies everything I love about the game. His confidence, his swagger, but also just his raw talent. Five-tool player. And I was really worried when he came back from his injury, that horrible injury that he had, which meant, of course, he missed out on the World Series in 2021. I was really worried that he was never going to be quite the player. And that this season, why was I worried? you know, wow, 41 home runs, 149 runs scored, 106 RBIs, 73 stolen bases. What a season. 416 OBP. Love that man. He's back. He is the best player in baseball. Don't give me this Shohei Ohtani nonsense. He is the best man in baseball. Why? Because he's going to play every game next season, 162 games, and he's going to take the Braves to the World Series in 2024. You heard it here first, boys.
Okay.
You know what that reminded me of? Can I just say?
Yeah, you go ahead first.
It reminded me of Animal House, where John Belushi goes on the speech about
One of my favorite movies, man.
When the Germans burn Pearl Harbor, and they're like, Germans? He's like, he's on a roll. Let him go. That's you are John Belushi.
Now, okay. I like to add on something here. You predicted. Now you're predicting that Acuna is gonna take him to the World Series next year. Yes. To brace the World Series in 2024. This is where I like also at this moment, this juncture of the show, to remind everybody about our dark horses picks in episode one. Josh picked the Chicago Cubs as a dark horse, and he wasn't wrong. They missed on the last day of the season by one game. Oh my God, who did I choose as a dark horse? Look out, because I think Bruce Bochy is going to do very well for this team. Hello. Texas Rangers was my dark horse. Yeah. Johnny Gould, do you remember what your dark horse was?
Yeah. Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado Rockies. There we go.
I don't know how the Rangers were a dark horse. I mean, they were, you know, one of the favorites to make the playoffs, but that's okay.
Can I point something out?
That lost 94 games last year. Come on.
Fair enough.
They weren't a favorite.
They had Seager and Simeon. Come on. They went out.
They weren't a favorite. They were...
Can I point out that the Athletics and the Royals won less games than the Rockies? They weren't the worst team.
Those were the other two. Those were picks for the AL and Central and West.
I don't think they were.
No, they weren't. Well, moving on, though. Okay.
Do you know, we should put all our picks up. We should have not just referenced the really bad one, but you know, who did we predict to win the division? Nobody predicted the Orioles, did they? To win the East?
I don't think so.
I don't think it. Okay, move on. Right. Okay, time for the seventh inning stretch. Woo! And this is a chance for Eric to dominate the airwaves on the Johnny and Josh podcast. We're going to kick things off with Eric's baseball book of the week. And just to mention that obviously we've been doing this podcast for four seasons, and not one of the many books that Josh has written has ever got a mention.
It has. And don't forget,
was I doing that show?
I compiled a list of what needs to be on your baseball book shelf, and seven of them are actually Josh's books. Thank you very much. That are actually listed on
the list that had about 500 references. Yeah. I'm talking about the show.
Where I was number 326.
On. Exactly.
Yeah, it was mentioned. I was actually in Canada, and I was enamored. I of course, it's like a wet dream when you go into a bookshop in Canada. Can I say that? It's because you go into the sports section in North America and you go to the baseball section, and oh my God, there's oodles and oodles of books and shelves stacked with baseball books. And I thought, because I was there doing the World Series in Canada, and I've only just recently come back, I chose a book written by Tyler Kettner. And of course, it's called The Grandest Stage, The History of the World Series. One thing I will say about Tyler Kettner is he's a very good author. He's written other baseball books. Now, this one, I'm not going to criticize it. Yes, The Grandest Stage is a good book to read about the history of the World Series, especially while reading it this week, doing the hubbub of the World Series. But he does go into a bit more too much detail, actually, sometimes. And it's sort of, he drones on and on. But if you stick with it, by the time you hit like chapter four, it's like, all right, now we're an automatic pilot. We can, you know, it's like, so stick with it. You might want to give up after chapter one, two, or three. But it has like interesting tidbits, such as, did you know that the famous, or I should say infamous, Babe Ruth, 1932, Game 3, World Series, Yankees versus Cubs, Babe Ruth pointing to center field with his bat, hit the called shot, and his ensuing home run that happened after that? Well, the pitcher who threw that the ball to Babe Ruth, that hit the home run, claims, and I quote, while he's on his deathbed, he said to his daughter, I gave my life to baseball, and I'll be remembered for something that actually never happened. It never happened. So
yeah, it's the true story is that the Cubs were razzing him, and he was pointing at the Cubs, saying like, okay. "Hey, I'm gonna." Yeah, exactly.
But he goes into detail. It goes a bit too much detail with that, but sort of like cross examines everything possible about that. You know, apparently there is video footage of Babe Ruth pointing to center field and then hitting the home run in the first pitch. Charlie Root, the pitcher, actually said, if he actually did that, I probably would have beamed him. So it's
just as an aside, too, Charlie Root, 1933 Gaudi baseball cards. It's one of my favorite cards from
you got one, too.
Go. I don't own it, but I like it. It's the best. I've been droning on about the 33 Gaudi set, but that Charlie Root card's a really good one. Very, even though he wasn't a superstar, his card's a very popular one from that
set. Well, there's Josh's birthday present already sorted.
What would that cost, JC? What would that cost to buy?
Could you go into $40, something like that.
All right. Okay.
So yeah. No, it's not really crazy. No,
We'll do a whip round. All right.
Yeah. What's the guy's name again?
Charlie Root.
Charlie Root. Okay, I'm in the hunt for Christmas presents. So that's
one more thing that Tyler Kepner mentions in the grandest stage, the history of World Series, in his book, is that the 1919 Black Sox scandal. Yeah, we're going back to that again, Mr. Semantics. The White Sox versus Cincinnati Reds. Now the Chicago White Sox, of course, accused of throwing the World Series, and a betting conglomerate. Was trying to, they took payments to throw the World Series. The story goes that the Cincinnati Reds were really that good that they were going to win anyway. Ooh. In fact, they were so good that, did you know, the Cincinnati Reds were also trying to throw the World Series, kind of, because when the series went back to Cincinnati, their World Series bonus pay was all reliant on gate receipts. So if they would have swept, or if they would have finished the series too early, they would have missed out on gate receipts. So they were trying to throw the World Series so they can add an extra game to get more money to the ticket revenue in Cincinnati. And that's how good those Cincinnati Reds were. They were able to control the fix. They're trying to fix the fix within the fix, if you know what I'm saying.
Wow.
So all that's a good one. Detailed in Tyler Kepner's book, The Grandest Stage.
Fantastic. There's another Christmas present for all our listeners. Right, let's move on. Cultural reference. What do we got? We got music?
We do have music. I was hoping to... Actually, happy birthday to Loretta Swit, a.k.a. Hot Lips Houlihan, from the TV series MASH.
MASH,
for those of you of a certain age who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, MASH was a TV series. I know, I always throw in a MASH reference. Loretta Swit is 86 years old.
No!
Can you believe it? Wow. Hot Lips.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Isn't so that the old greatest name of any character in any
She actually TV hated show? That Lips. Oh. Now, the baseball reference and connotation and connection to this?
Yeah.
Absolutely none. I just want to say a happy birthday to Loretta Swit while she's
still Hot Lips Houlihan. Love it.
I was hoping to leave, you know, this last show on a high. Because sometimes I'll try to find a music track that's apropos to the show or to what's happening this week. Now, the Arizona Diamondbacks, yes, they lost, but I couldn't find, there's no Arizona Diamondbacks song per se, or, you know, anything on vinyl that exists, because they only came out in 1998, right? So there was, but I found a Texas Rangers song. Now it's not the greatest, but it's, they've won. So I figure I'll give them their dues. And their song is, this is a song that they used to play in the stadium when they first moved to Arlington in Dallas. And the song, if you were to walk into to the stadium in 1974 to 1980, you'd have heard this song.
More than just an idea, more than just a dream, the spirit of adventure gave birth to a team. They brought them down to Texas and gave them a new name. And since that time, they just haven't been the same. Yes, they're called Texas Rangers. They've grown with the Metroplex, they've made a lot of friends. Yes, on and off the field, they are quite a bunch of men. They've set some high goals, yes, they've got a lot of class. The World Series in Texas will now be here at last. All because
are number one. Let's all get together and get behind our team. Our voices will unite as the stands begin to sing. The eyes of Texas are upon you all across the American League.
Okay. It's not the greatest, it's not the best, but then no. You virtually never do play a song that's half decent. But I sort of like it in a sort of funny sort of way.
It's country, sure.
But exactly.
I don't think it's country, it's bluegrass, isn't it?
My God, is it to you? Oh, you know the vernacular of music? Look at this. Now, the thing is, it's apparently they stopped playing it in the stadium in 1980, and it was as a band, it's by the was it called the Mark Singleton Band or Singletary Band? Yeah, never heard of them either. But they stopped playing in the stadium in 1980. And then when Nolan Ryan took over as CEO of the Texas Rangers, he reinstated it back especially when they moved to the new stadium. And it made a brief resurgence. And if you are a Texas Rangers fan through and through from that era, it is a nostalgic song, but you know we're poo-pooing it because it's not really our cup of tea. It's a piece of history, baseball music.
As indeed it was a Texas win for their first World Series win. And by the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about this when we were doing a World Series roundup. 11 on the road victories in the postseason for the Texas Rangers. I mean, what the hell was going on, JC? If I remember rightly, the D-backs and the Phillies, not one single home game went to the home team. They were all away wins in a 7-game series. Madness.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those anomalies that you just sort of shrug at. I don't think that there's rhyme or reason to it. I love we haven't even talked about the whole Creed song, right? That they had this galvanizing song by Creed that they just kept playing over and over again.
And apparently Creed showed up at the last game as well. So.
Yeah.
Well, Creed as in Apollo Creed.
No, the band Creed. Oh, my God. You were still young when Creed was popular, Goldie. You were like in your 40s.
That's not young. That's middle-aged.
Yeah.
Now I'm way beyond. Anyway, okay. Okay, guys, we're almost there at the end of the show, but we need an answer to the trivia. Eric, just a quick repeat of the question, please.
Yes, I earlier mentioned that Will Smith was the first player to have won 3 consecutive World Series for 3 different teams. Well, my question to you was, who was the last player to have played for 3 consecutive World Series with 3 different teams? And I gave you 4 options, right? And it was A, Don Baylor, B, Eric Hinsky, C, Jock Peterson, or D, Ben Zobrist. And who wants to go first? Johnny wants to go first. All right.
Yeah. Because I know the answer. So.
Oh, do you? Yeah. Right. I 100%. I assumed you did. So therefore, it was important I went first so that everybody didn't think I was cheating because that would be normal. My instinct is Jock Peterson.
Okay, interesting. Josh Chetwin, do you share that same instinct?
That instinct is unfortunately incorrect. Actually, two of those players.
Maybe.
Two of those players went 3 straight World Series with 3 different teams. Those are Don Baylor and Eric Hinsky. Eric Hinsky is the more recent one. 2007, he won a World Series with the Red Sox, then played in the World Series in 2008. And 2009, won another World Series with the New York Yankees. I know this because it was something that had come up, and I was like, oh, I'm going to talk about this on the show. And when Eric brought it up, I'm like, oh, I already know that.
So who was he playing in the 2008 World Series in?
I can't remember. That was
Tampa Bay Rays and
Tampa Bay Rays. Yep. We were there.
That was our last show. Our last ever World Series.
Correct. So
he didn't play a ton, though, by the way. I feel like he had like a total of like 4 at bats in those 3 World Series.
He got a World Series.
So it shouldn't really count?
No, so
he played the right amount of games in regular season.
He played in all. Like Will Smith didn't play in the World Series last year, but got a ring. He didn't play.
Should the Braves give him a ring? There you go. In your face. Now, the thing is, Jock Peterson did play in 2 World Series.
That's why I went with him because I knew he played in 2.
So did Ben Zobrist. I love the fact that, you know, 2 out of the 4 players that you could have picked, you didn't. So,
Don Baylor would have been right. You asked the last one to do it,
correct?
And that was Hinsky. Because Baylor did it with, I think he went with the Red Sox in 86, then Oakland in 87, and the Twins in 88.
Yeah, vice versa.
At least I knew which player was a long time ago and which ones were more recent. So therefore, given the question was, which is the most recent, I went with a recent player. At least I did that. At least
good
that
for you,
logical.
Goldie. Good for Thank you.
Well, I know, but the thing was, when I was trying to think of what teams they played for and therefore which ones have gone to the World Series, Peterson was the only one who was absolutely convinced that on at least, I could think of at least the two occasions he'd been to the World Series. That's why I went with it.
But no, it's right.
No one expects me to get it right, guys. No, that's fine. I'm just going to go and sit in a dark room.
You have a perfect
humiliating
record.
Me again.
You got a whole off-season to think about it, Goldie.
And you have you're the Ketel Marte of getting trivia questions wrong.
Absolutely true. Absolutely
new,
true.
New league record.
Excuse me. Did either of you raise over $500,000 yesterday for good causes? No. Stick that in your pipe. Okay, moving on. Oh, we've got nothing else to talk about. It's a goodbye from me.
Actually, there's, I think there's some breaking news from David Langell.
Yes. Do you want me to read it out?
Yeah, so David Langell sent us a message while we were on the air, and Johnny, about his kid, who is in his Little League game, important game today in New York City. That's why he can be on the show, and he sent Johnny his message.
This is the message. This is the update, the match report of his young boy playing Little League Baseball. Message from David Langell, who couldn't be with us because of his love for his son. It reads, bases loaded, nobody out, down 5-4. Bases loaded, nobody out, down just one run.
Last inning, presumably.
Last inning. I'm assuming it is. He didn't say if it was. We're just going to go with it because it's more dramatic. Okay, so just to remind you, bases loaded, nobody out, down 5-4. Only need one to tie it, two to win. Unassisted triple play. Oh my lord. You could wait your entire life, says Dave, and never see something like it. And his kid was on the receiving end. Unassisted triple play, JC.
I want to know more details because I want to know how old that kid is. Because if he's like six, I see the unassisted triple play happening. It's like kids running everywhere, tagging people everywhere. But if it's like a 12-year-old kid, that's pretty crazy.
That's a heartbreaker.
Oh, yeah.
As a parent, you're going, there's no out. The bases are loaded.
By the way, Dave, is this another message? Well, while we're live here on air, saying, I went to check to see if this ever happened in Major League Baseball history before. And it says the last time it happened was 2009 against the Mets.
Is that right? Yeah.
Fantastic.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. That's great.
And on that
That's the thing about David. He doesn't show up for the show and he's still the most value added piece of the team.
That's a very good point. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. At his child's expense. That's an irrelevance. Yeah. We'll ignore that detail. Oh, boys. Well, guys, it's another season comes to an end. Another year of the Johnny and Josh podcast comes to an end. By the way, when I did Times Radio last week, they not only referenced it at the top, they referenced it at the back to say the presenter off. We got some marketing out there.
I got a lot of, when I was doing the London series, I got a lot of Johnny and Josh swag for us. Yeah, mentioned.
Should we mention to our listeners that moving forward to 2024, we're contemplating a name change and we'd love their input? Do you think we should mention that now? Do you think that's
sure.
relevant? A little teaser?
Yeah, because we need to figure out a reason to get Eric and Dave certainly to show up. Because, it should be called the Dave Langell podcast. Maybe that'd be the only way we'll get him to show up.
But that'd be hilarious. We call it the Dave Langell podcast. And he's the only
one who shows
up.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, you see, my suggestion for the new name is Where's David Langell podcast? That's my suggestion. But I think, Eric, you've got one as well that you've been thinking along the lines of.
We're not past the watershed.
No, the watershed yet. If you want to come meet me at any pub and buy me a pint, and I'll tell you exactly what the name should be. But yeah, not it's a family show. So
it's a family show. Okay. Yeah.
It's not really, but like even that's beyond the pale.
Beyond the pale? I mean, as long as you're putting out a warning saying if you're easily offended, switch off now. No?
Okay. Go find. I think this is great. There, where is David Langell? Where is Eric Jansen? So you can find out what his name idea was.
Yes.
And we get people stalking him in London.
Actually, next time I'm at a watch party that's organized by MLB UK community. /hashtag whatever you want to call it, then ask me, Eric, what was the the idea you had, that's not for young viewers' ears.
This is also a litmus test to see whether anyone listens all the way to the end of the show, because no one's going to ask you, because
this is regular. Because, by the way, yes, I was at the last MLB UK community watch party at the Passanunk Avenue, but the one near Nine Elms, near the Battersea Power Station, because the one in the Westfield Mall in Stratford is now closed down. They're moving to Waterloo, just to throw in some more. So next time there are watch parties, keep an eye out on MLB UK community on their Twitter feed. All these watch parties will be moved to other parts of London.
Buddy, that's great news. Waterloo's a lot closer for me. I might actually be able to attend one. That sounds awesome. By the way, why are they called watch parties? Are you all turning up and selling Rolexes or something?
That's the fifth time you use that joke on the show.
No, I think I said Timex last time. I didn't want to offend
anybody. Now it makes it more funny.
I've gone Rolex. I'm upgraded.
Eric, don't upset Grandpa. He'll get angry.
So, boys, since this is the last time that we have a reason to touch base on a monthly basis, let me just ask a simple question. What's in the world of Eric start things off for the next 6 months or the next 4 months until spring training starts? What have you got to look forward to, big guy? What's going to be the
hype? Yeah, well, actually, lots of ice hockey. I'm working on the Champions Hockey League, so I'll be traveling around Europe a lot, chasing hockey pucks. But sadly, I was supposed to have gone to Dubai for this new thing called Baseball United. Keep an eye on it. I gutted that I can't.
Bartolo's actually playing.
Cologne.
I wish we had a whole podcast to talk about Baseball United.
I know. Bartolo Cologne is coming out of retirement to play baseball in Dubai in this tournament called Baseball United.
It's a league. They're playing a game, and then it's going to be a league.
But that's so cool. I mean, if it takes off, that would be really cool. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Hey, Bartolo Colon, the last Montreal Expo, still playing baseball.
Tons of European connections, too. Three people who played for Great Britain in that league. Italian players.
John McLaren as well, who's managing one of the teams. There he's a former Seattle Mariners manager and also worked with me and the MLB game development project, as well as Dylan Unsworth from South Africa.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. Guys, always a pleasure. I hope this, just because the season's over and therefore the podcast is over, that you're not going to be strangers. I'm assuming we're going to stay in touch. We're going to do something, you know, away from the public eye.
Sure.
No? Okay, fine. Well, then let me take this opportunity to wish you both a happy Christmas. If clearly I'm not going to see you for the next 6 weeks.
Merry New Year, and really enjoy Arbor Day, because I think that's an important holiday to get love for.
Yeah.
Guys, you're my baseball brothers. I love you both.
Okay. Right back at you, Goldie. No. I thought you'd say more. I thought there was more to be said.
Well,
we love you, Goldie.
We got a little pointy.
Oh, yeah. Keep. Will we be back next season? I guess maybe we'll see.
Yes.
It's up to you, viewers/listeners, if you're clicking like, if you're subscribing.
Eric's so needy. He's so needy.
Yeah, I don't care if nobody hits the like button. I'm coming back, even if I'm on my own, even if it's just me and JC.
If you don't get 100 likes, I'm not coming back. It's up to you guys.
Oh.
100 likes.
Rises.
There we go.
Love you loads, guys. Thanks ever so much. That's it, everybody. The end of the 2023 season of the Johnny and Josh podcast, with contributions from Eric Jansen, the producer, and that's it. Just this rip. Thank you for listening. Till next year. Today, we love you. Bye, guys. Thank you for listening.